Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Hold hands and close your eyes. It's 12:30, and you're listening to the Ghost Story Pass.
Welcome to the Ghost Story, guys. I'm Brennan Storr.
I'm Paul Bestel.
And this is the show where we talk about spooks, specters, and all the other things watching us from the shadows beyond the campfire. Some conversations only make sense after the sun has set, and this is most definitely one. Thanks for tuning in. This is episode number 155, and we're coming to you from that tiny mountain cabin you dream about, but can never quite reach. Paul, my Mediterranean friend, Mediterranean in spirit, at the very least, how you doing?
I'm very well, very well. Yes. How are you, sir?
I am good. I'm on the precipice of something. I can't tell if it's just a cough brought on by how dry my goddamn apartment is now that everything is cold outside. Or if I'm getting sick. I'm balanced on that knife edge of, you know, hypochondria and annoyance. And So I'm currently puzzling that out. But I will say, I got a quick story to tell now that we've started the show. Today, I went to go look at another apartment. Oh. Now, I'm here in Montreal for an indeterminate period of time. My lease extends until X in the room where I'm currently sharing. But I can't remember, I think it was on Instagram. I saw an ad for a new building, and they were trying to get people to come to view it for viewings because they're only like 70% occupancy. Mm. So I looked at the website, and genuinely, there was no way I could afford it. And they're looking for year-long leases, which is more than I can commit to anyways. But I thought, well, I'm going to make an appointment because I want to see what this place looks like inside, because I too am Mediterranean, specifically Italian, and that makes me nosy. So I want to know what everyone else is doing. So I went there and this morning, and I had this appointment. And now the building is exquisite. It's a gorgeous building. The amenities look like something from, I don't know. It's very fancy. There's a full built-in co-working space. There's a gym, a screening room. It's very pretty. And The whole time I'm seeing all this, I'm thinking, I bet I cannot even come close to affording even a studio apartment in this place. But I'm going to pretend like I'm not thinking that. Mm. And so she shows me around. She shows me the studio apartment, which is about the size of the closet I'm recording this in, I might add. And I said, oh, okay, this is lovely. Do you have a one bedroom? Oh, yes. So she shows me the one bedroom, which is the same room, just with a smaller room in it. I assume so you can sleep hanging from the ceiling like Dracula. And I then asked, what is the price? And I won't say on here, but what followed her giving me that price was my single greatest acting performance in any medium, possibly that I will ever give, because I did not immediately shit myself so hard it blew out the seat of my trousers. I went, oh, okay, that sounds good. And what does that include? Perfect, lovely. All right, well, tell you what, I'm looking at a couple other places. I'll be in touch. And then I jumped out the window, never to return.
Did your eye start going like Inspector Dreyfus in the Pink Panther?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I felt like such an imposter. All the people working in the co-working space were these young, slim professionals with their like pressed, tailored clothes. And I mean, I'm walking through there. I look good, but I don't look like I walked out of TikTok and into the building, which is what everyone else there looked like. Mm. And so that was the end of my adventures in high society. And I'm quite comfortable leaving it that way. Mm. In better news, though, we have some great news to share, and that is the new ghoststoryguys.com is up.
Yeah.
So we have a brand new website, which is, you know, much like the old boss, similar to the new website. But You can now order print-on-demand merchandise, just like you would from Redbubble or TeePublic, directly from our website. And we've partnered with a platform called Fourth Wall. So they essentially provide the same services that Redbubble or TeePublic do, but you buy them directly from ghoststoryguys.com. We've added a few new designs. We've added things like episode covers, because we had people asking about, you know, for example, The Mystery of Missing Time. So a lot of folks asked about getting that episode cover on a t-shirt. Yep. So now you can get that at ghoststoryguys.com. And I'll be doing the same thing for Luke Lore in the coming months. And yeah, it's very cool stuff. And also there's another option on that website, which is something that people have done in past, is people have asked about a one-time gift to the show. Maybe they don't necessarily want to join Patreon because Patreon's app sucks, which it does. And instead they're asking, can we just give a one-time gift? And now you can. If you go to ghoststoryguys.com, there's a form to fill out right at the bottom of the page, and you can give a one-time gift to the show. We'll shout you out in the same segment as the patrons, and just makes everyone's life a little easier.
Cool.
Yeah. And one more piece of news. If you are, if you want access to some of our bonus content, but you know, again, Patreon sucks, you don't want to navigate Patreon, but you access the show through Apple Podcasts, soon, hopefully in the next month, you will be able to access for, via subscription fee, and you'll get access to that right in your Apple Podcatcher. Because I know some people have an issue with being able to access our content outside of Patreon. You know, some apps will let you plug in a custom RSS feed, some won't. But if you're on Apple, then we're working on making as much of that patron content available there as possible, and you'll be able to subscribe right inside Apple Podcasts. So we're looking forward to launching that. Keep an eye out. We'll mention it on the show when it finally goes live. But yeah, that is some cool new news, and then some even cooler stuff on the horizon. Speaking of patrons.
This one's for the patrons.
Patrons, you're the topo to our Gijo, which is to say we are small, but together we are mighty. And that's a deep cut. You guys are going to have to go looking for that one. Every single person who listens to Ghost Story Guys helps make us who we are, but patrons are the ones who truly help the show go. You guys pay the bills, you guys provide the show's budget. Without you, there is no show, and we appreciate the hell out of every single one of you. And right now, we would like to specifically thank our latest patrons. They are...
Oddly Cryptid.
Oscar Giesbrecht.
JJ907.
Rama Sharma.
Molly Ann.
Charlie DePatri.
Carol Morrow.
Jackie Shafizadeh. Guys, thank you so, so, so much. Again, we cannot tell you how much your contribution means to us. Patrons past, present, and what the hell, future as well. Every single one of you, we deeply, deeply appreciate your support. And if you'd like to join the team, head to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. That's patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. If you listen to the end of the show, we'll tell you about all the cool stuff you get. But we will say, for $1 a month, you get an ad-free feed. Who doesn't want that? Ads suck. Except for the ones Paul and I write, which are pretty great. If you're a patron, you still get to hear those, but you get to choose to listen to them. You don't have to listen to them. And I think that makes all the difference. It does for me, at least. Patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. All right. Shout out to our composer, Rainy Days for Ghosts. Rainy Days for Ghosts is a project of film journalist and composer Jerry Smith. You can find Jerry's stuff on streaming platforms everywhere. And if you'd like to hire them for your latest project, shoot them an email at rainydaysforghosts@gmail.com. All right, Paul. It's almost that time. We have a great lineup of listener stories, including one that's, well, really, it's just a good old-fashioned haunted house. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. So during the break, Paul was telling me about this particular nightmare from Hawaii. What is it that happened today, Paul?
A lady was nearly crushed by a massive boulder that decided to roll through her house in Hawaii. I think she lived in a suburb on Honolulu called Palolo.
It could very well be. I don't know Honolulu that well.
No, neither do I. But she heard a foot. She was about to sit in her front room to watch some telly, And then she heard a funny noise, so she stopped. And as she stopped, this boulder just rolled past her and smashed all her front room to pieces.
Oh, my God.
And it's all caught on camera. And she was quite thankful. She's hurt her leg, so she was limping. And that's why she wasn't as quick as she would normally have walked in her house. Because if she had, she'd be dead.
Oh, wow.
So she seems quite cheerful about the situation. So clearly she's got insurance.
Yeah. I was going to say, if a boulder had not killed me and I lived in Honolulu and I had insurance, yeah, I might be okay with that too.
Yeah. I mean, the footage is just like, bloody hell. It's one of them. Oh, Jesus Christ.
You got a link? You should send me a link.
I will send you a link. Hang on.
Oh my God. The force of that, that is a very, very specific message from God.
Probably Holy one shit. Of the old gods, I would suggest.
Oh yeah, that is, yeah, that's, there's nothing New Testament about that.
Yeah, that's Pele all day.
Wow. All right, well, check the show notes for that because that was incredible. Good Lord. No, that doesn't make me afraid of the natural world here where it's about to get to minus 29 and I'm 28 floors above the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Good times. All right, well, you know, there's only one cure for this terror you've inflicted upon me, Paul. And that is the email.
Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs.
We're ready to believe you.
All right. So, as always, we love hearing from you folks. If you want to write us, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com is the place to send it. We do have a contact form on the website, but the contact form doesn't have anywhere for you to include pictures. So if you want to send us a photo or a screen grab, the best way to do that is ghoststoryguys@gmail.com. So our first email is from Alicia. Hello, I love your show, mostly because of your laughs, which I find completely contagious. Thank you. I listen all the time while I clean house, paint, run errands, and walk to my kid's school to pick them up. Here's my story. I was watching To Catch a Thief years ago with my husband. During the costume ball scene, we just about fell out of our chairs. One of the extras comes directly to the front of the cameras, and she looks like my identical twin. We watched it about 15 times, and we were completely stunned. We showed our kids and my parents recently, and they were dumbfounded. I'm not sure how to send you a picture here through this contact form. Oh, there you go. Yeah. So via email, Alicia, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com. But I can still send you the shot and a picture of me if I have direct email so you can see proof. Yeah, please send it. That'd be great. Interestingly, my dad was with his dad years ago before I was born, and they ran directly into my grandpa's doppelganger. As soon as the guy saw my grandpa, he freaked out and started running through a huge crowd, pushing people out of the way as if he was running for his life. My dad is a veteran, very serious, and never embellishes anything. He swears this guy was an identical twin to my grandpa. I find it fascinating that both my grandpa and I have seen our doppelganger. I have no idea why or what that means as far as the cosmos go, but it's pretty weird. Keep up your great work, your humor, and your encouragement for people to pursue mental well-being. Cheers, Alicia. And Alicia, that's great. It's funny. I mean, there are a finite number of faces, and everyone just has a variation on a classic face. So I have seen, if you really watch people, you start to see it. You start, and sometimes their personalities kind of hold across. You know, there's a guy, for example, like a Bill. If I see a Bill, I think, all right, well, that guy's probably a Weasley bastard. And generally speaking, the Bills are Weasley bastards. It's kind of impressive in a way. Although there is a darker suggestion to this, Paul. Have you seen that movie, Three Perfect Strangers?
Hey, it's me. I got the name wrong. It is Three Identical Strangers, not Three Perfect Strangers.
No.
Okay, so it's a documentary about these three identical triplets.
Oh, are they the ones that are all adopted and it ends up being some kind of sperm donor scandal thing type queer
thing? No, they were adopted. They were separated as an experiment.
Eesh.
As I understand it, they were adopted out to different families. And I believe a number of identical siblings were as a kind of experiment to see what would happen if you brought up these people in different environments. And it was very, very disturbing stuff. It really, it messed, one of them, I believe, passed from addiction. You know, the circumstances of his life were such that he couldn't cope. But really, really fascinating stuff. Horrifying, but interesting as well.
Mm.
Not that I'm suggesting that's what's happened in your case, Alicia. Sometimes, there are also just a finite number of faces.
Yeah. I'm very annoyed that Andre Agassi stole my look.
Well, I've been saying that for years. This Agassi guy. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure who he thinks he is, but he stole Paul's look.
Yep, yeah, because I went bald first and I shaved it all off. And obviously it's the 90s, so I had a bit of a goatee beard in my early 20s, you know, rocking it, rocking the pirate look. And then Andre Agassi, because I love tennis, as some people may be surprised to know. And I turned on the Australian Open, and who rocks up with his new shaved hair and goatee beard? But only Andre Agassi. He also has had a thing for Steffi Graf, as I did. he ended up marrying her.
The bastard.
God damn it. I'm telling you, that man's psychic. He reads my mind.
Agassi, if you're listening, and we know you are, we're coming for you. You hear me? We're coming for you.
Yeah, I'm only going to come. I'm only going to come and hug him because I love him.
Okay, well that's fine. I'll hug you too because you won't like that, and that works. This I will avenge my good friend Paul's look, and I'll get a hug. I'm pretty lonely these days, so that's fine.
We'll hug it out.
There we go. Local weirdos hug tennis superstar. I can see the news now.
Tennis demigod. Our next message is from Kerry. I didn't catch that episode where you read my email and my stories when it first came out because I was travelling internationally, putting my podcast listening on hold during that time. I am back in my truck and I have jumped right on looking up these podcasts you recommended. I will add them to my rotation. If I don't enjoy any of them, Brennan, it's 100% your fault and 0% Paul's fault. Good man.
Sure.
I want to tell you that hearing my stories read by the two of you, it allowed me to appreciate more than ever what great orators you both are. My stories sounded better than I thought they ever could with you guys telling them. Beautiful job. You perfectly captured the tone and mental pictures that I was aiming to create. I have an update on the story of the truck stop that I couldn't find. I found that truck stop. I had parked at the Flying J in Breezewood, PA, and I thought it was a Petro because there is a Perkins restaurant at this truck stop. In addition to beginning with PE, the colour scheme for Perkins restaurants is similar to Petro truck stops. I feel rather dumb after basically bragging about how good I was paying attention to details. So much for that. As I type this email, I am parked at the Russian Georgian restaurant in Loganton, PA, a place that happens to have truck parking. This place is surrounded by Pennsylvanian forest, and it just feels creepy, like I am right at the edge of entering something ominous were I to walk into the forest. Don't worry, I won't. It's not that I have a problem walking in the forest. I simply save walking into the forest for areas where someone, like the National Park Service for example, has gone and modernised the trail going into said forest. No walking into this forest for Kerry. Oh, and something else I would like to share, mostly because it bears relevance for one of my included stories. I am a dude.
Kerry, that was our bad. We made an assumption there. That was on us. So, you know, I appreciate you writing in, man, because not everyone would do that, you know, when they recognize, I missed the detail or you recognized your mistake. And again, not a lot of people do that. And I do think some of the paranormal stories we get are kind of a result of people just maybe not recognizing their error. And they just go, oh, fuck it. You know, like, actually, I just shared a story on Book of the Dead that our listener, Foxy Peach, our patron Foxy Peach mentioned that, you know, she said, this story is either fake or it is about someone who believes they may have found the body of a murdered girl and just left it there. And I said, well, yeah, no, you make a great point. And looking at the comments on the forum where the person originally posted this, I thought, yeah, this is probably fake. And I think the person only realized what the story they had concocted suggested, which is that, yes, this does indicate as a child they would have found the body of another murdered child. I think they only realized that after the fact, and then they were trying to do some fancy footwork to both explain why they never would have alerted authorities, but also, in, you know, keep the integrity of the story. And yeah, anyways, point being, they made that shit up and they just forgot to cover the tracks. Obviously, Kerry, you know, you realized your mistake and you told us. And yeah, no, that's pretty cool. And we will be sharing Kerry's stories on a future episode.
Yes. And he doesn't want to go walking in the woods in Pennsylvania.
No, Jesus, no.
Especially in Chestnut Ridge.
anywhere. In Pennsylvania, I put it to you, that is a bad idea.
Yes, yes. If you see Stan Gordon, run away.
Just stand behind him.
Hey!
Also, just quickly, Kerry, you were mentioning Perkins, man, you brought me back. I haven't been to a Perkins in years. Perkins, we used to call that because we didn't have one in Revelstoke. But when we would go to the town of Kelowna for like an out of town, you know, overnight trip, which that was, you know, like 2.5 hours away. That was fancy time. 70,000 people in that town. And there was a Perkins across from the hotel we would always stay at. And so that was, to us, that was upscale Denny's. So you go to, if we're going for breakfast at Perkins, we're having fancy breakfast. So this gives you an indication of what my upbringing was like.
Well, I recognized one of the restaurant chains you mentioned there. The rest of it's complete alien language to me.
Was it Denny's?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Denny's. I tell you, man, the pandemic, of all the things it destroyed, that it took apart Denny's may have hurt me the most. Because one of the things the pandemic has done is it's made people realize, oh, yeah, life is short. I don't want to spend my life working, having someone shout at me for garbage money while they make all of it. Well, I ran into a guy, he used to work as a host at one of the places I would go to. And he told me, he said, yeah, he said, I during the pandemic, I went back to school for economics and I've retrained. He said, the money was fine, but the amount of bullshit you put up with, why would I? And I think a lot of people have done the same. And consequently, Denny's is no longer 24 hours. And when Denny's is no longer 24 hours, or at least the ones in my, when I was living in Victoria, something at the core of society is broken.
The veil has lifted.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. It's the end of an era. We are now in a brave new world. This one comes from Brendy. Brendy says, I was listening to your podcast and there was mention of taking rocks from foreign locations being a bad practice. My husband goes to all of these really cool places I will never see for work. I'm pretty weird about rocks. And since I won't ever go to these places, I ask him to bring me a pebble or a rock back home. Should I feel bad about this? I mean, I don't think you need to feel bad about it, Brandy. I just, you know, there is a very troublesome issue with some people taking rocks from sacred sites, places like this, places, you know, where, you're specifically, they're asked not to take rocks and people will just do it anyways. And of course, you know, if one person does it, well, that one rock is not going to hurt. But the problem is when you've got thousands upon thousands of people saying to themselves, oh, one rock's not going to hurt. Well, pretty soon the sacred site is primarily living in the lounges of a bunch of foreign tourists. Hmm. And don't feel bad. Don't feel bad. There's not, no need. But if it's a sacred site, you know, if it's important to any culture and you're told, you know, don't take a rock, don't take a rock.
Hmm. Or if it's cursed.
Or if it's cursed, yeah. Speaking of Hawaii, those guys get hundreds of pounds of rocks every year.
Hmm.
Yeah. From people who take rocks and get subjected to what they believe is Pele's curse.
Yeah, yeah. Pompeii, they have a real problem. People are chipping bits off and nicking stuff off corpses and things.
Good God, they're bodies for fuck's sakes.
Well, people don't care, do they? Some people, they just don't give a damn.
So how'd you get that? That's really cool. Well, I went up to a dead body.
And I broke its finger off.
Yeah. Oh, what a hero you are. Oh. Here's someone I want to spend more time with.
Here's some cauterized pyroclastic flow.
Jesus Christ. I remember a friend came back from Thailand and he brought two pieces of coral and I thought, what is wrong with you? What? Well, they're for you. That doesn't make me feel better. Now I feel worse.
Here's some dead sea life. Enjoy. Yeah. This will
I murdered
you.
Something beautiful for you. What is this? I want to play God of War. I don't want to live it.
You can make it into a fancy crown.
Oh, great, great. I'm Poseidon of the living room. Fantastic.
Oh, why not? We've all done that in the bath. Who hasn't?
And we're learning stuff about Paul today, folks.
I do sometimes think I am part merman, the amount of time I spend in the bath. But anyway, moving on.
Moving on.
Our next message is from John. And John says, hope this email finds you well. Pretty much brand new to the show, so lucky me, has loads of content to catch up with. Anyways, enough waffling. Living in the UK and Paul being a Yorkshireman, I'm from the other side, Red Rose County, sorry. It's all right, I quite like Manchester, don't worry. This story happened in Wetherby, a small village in Yorkshire, which I'm sure Paul is well aware of. I was staying at a friend's house. It stood empty most days as their grandparents had died, but they kept it as a little getaway gaff. Me and my now wife used it every now and then for a weekend away from the real world. Well, one night just watching TV, I got a very odd feeling of being watched. I turned around and saw something I wasn't expecting. A mass of what I can only describe as twinkling fairy lights were hovering in the doorway, which joined the living room to the hallway. I gripped my missus and told her to look, me being obsessed with everything paranormal since I can remember. I couldn't contain my excitement at real proof. I'm not a nutter. My missus, on the other hand, is a complete sceptic. I jumped off the settee and ran towards it. It moved and fast up the stairs where I chased it into the back bedroom. I'd cornered it, and then I realised what I'd done and panic set in. What do I do now? Luckily, my better half had joined me just as it rushed me. I can't describe how it felt other than being plunged into a static-filled ice bath. It's the most bizarre and strange feeling I've ever felt, and just like that it was over. I stood there, every hair on end, and freezing but feeling completely justified that my obsession with ghosts had finally come to fruition. I've been back to this house a couple more times since, but nothing has happened. Even my wife, who witnessed it, still struggles to believe what she saw. Not what I'd expect a ghost to look like, but it was a life-changing event, that's for sure. Keep up the amazing work, guys.
That's crazy.
Yeah, well, they're a bit weird in Weatherby anyway, so.
There we go. Paul explained your mystery right there. You're all just weird.
Well, they're not local, so you can't blame it on that. So, I'm above such patriotism towards counties. I've spent a lot of time in Lancashire, so there's no offence or rivalry there for me.
So, what do you think about that fairy lights?
It's a very odd experience, by no doubt. It's not the kind of thing I would expect to be seen in a house.
No.
I mean, Weatherby is a bit of a strange place because it's kind of one of the last towns in Yorkshire as you head to the northeast. You kind of hit Weatherby, and then there's not much till you get to Middlesbrough. So it's just on the top of the Yorkshire Moors up there, which is a wonderfully lonely place. It's the kind of, if you were ever to wonder where werewolves could live in England, then the North Yorkshire Moors would be it, and Weatherby's on the beginning of it. So it's a very rough and rugged area. Stunningly beautiful, but I would not be surprised strange things are around up there.
All right. Well, thanks again, John. And yeah, let us know should you ever see something like that again. Final message today comes from Charlie. Charlie says, I'm waiting for the new episode and I'm listening to Like a Pep Rally in Hell. I have a question for you, Brennan. Why, oh why, didn't you think to check the back of the minivan in LA? I was like, holy shit, there's somebody in the back of the fucking van and the white car is trying to warn you. I also want to back up Paul's recommendation to watch Exists. It was one of the best Sasquatch films in a long time. Also, did either of you see The Hunted from 2013? It's one of the creepiest films I've seen. Not a greatly made film, but the content and especially the sound makes up for the lousy acting. The two guys are being stalked by a screaming female entity in the dense woods of West Virginia. Check it out. So thank you, Charlie. I on your recommendation after seeing this email, I did rent it. I have not watched it yet, but it's waiting for me in Google Play probably tonight. So I will mention on a future show you're a patron too, so I might even do it there, but I will mention how The Hunted is. Have you seen The Hunted, Paul?
No, I haven't. I'm refusing to watch anything else until I make myself watch the third part of the In Search of Darkness documentary.
Fair. All right, well, watch this space, Charlie. And as far as the checking the back of the van thing, you assume too much, sir. I checked the back of that van. I am the guy who used to check the back of my car every time I got in it. You bet your sweet ass I checked the back of that minivan every time I got in it. No. Bren does not get in any vehicle without first checking the back seat. I've been doing this show for too long. There is no way in hell. All right. Well, thanks to everyone who wrote in. We love hearing from you guys. Again, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com is a place to send it. Your comments, questions, your stories, all of it. We love hearing from you. Again, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com. And with that, it's time for the stories. The Room in the Eaves from Timothy. Hey guys. Started listening a couple months ago while walking my dog and now can't wait for your latest episode. Thanks for the company. Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for listening. Got a story I've been thinking on for a while, though I'm typing it on my phone, so apologies for any spelling mistakes. Back when I was a kid, my parents moved into a big house with me and my brother. We weren't well off, and the house was bigger than we would have been able to afford, except that it was in a bit of a state. Lots of work needed to make it into a home. The house had four floors, including the basement, an old Victorian coal cellar, and an attic that had a staircase leading up to it. The basement has its own stories that I won't get into here, because they are 50-50 either ghost or home invasion. Yikes. Today I'm talking attic room. The stairs had no doorway, just a staircase with spindles that led down to the first floor landing, turning at the bottom to face my parents' bedroom door. When we first moved in, we noticed that the wall in the attic that would be directly behind you as you climbed the stairs had a raised lump in it, just over 5 feet high and a couple feet wide. My dad, being the inquisitive sort, wasted little time in whacking a crowbar into the lip of the lump and prying off a panel that had been fixed under the wallpaper. It had been covering an old doorway into the eave of the roof. The space behind was large and contained a few knickknacks of little interest. The main attraction was a large old dining table with 6 seats, set up, just fitting into the space. An interesting thing to set up in the eaves and then board up and paper over. We actually used the dining table for a while, although, to my recollection, we had to dismantle it to get it out of the triangular space. My dad fit a small door over the space, and we used it as a bit of a dumping ground for Christmas decorations and random kit we didn't have use for. The door didn't fit perfectly, and we would often find it wide open when we went to the attic. I always told myself it was an ill-fitting lock in the wind that opened it, to assure myself nothing paranormal was going on. But as a kid, I remember many times thinking how there was no draft in that room, and for all the rattling, I couldn't get the door to open without turning the knob. This was a good story to tell friends who stayed over, about the paranormal tea party in the attic with ghosts who leave the door open. It continued for a few years with little other than the door being regularly found open, until my parents had a light fitted into the eaves so we could see the clutter of stuff accumulating up there without a flashlight. Now, my parents would sleep with the door open a crack so they could hear me and my brother leaving our rooms in the night. Shortly after the light was fitted, my dad woke up to a noise late at night. Looking to the door, he could see light through the crack in his bedroom door. Upon opening his door, he could see the light from the space beside the attic shining on the staircase. Not only was the door open, but the light had been turned on. He resolved himself to turn the light off and started up the stairs. Upon stepping on the third step, as his back was to the open doorway above him, he heard a click, and the lights turned off, and he was plunged into darkness. At this, his resolve failed, and after a few seconds of standing in the dark, he retreated back down the stairs, checked my brother and I were in our respective rooms, and went to bed. Lots of odd little occurrences like this happened in that house, but this was the most interesting. Timothy, that's great, man. I got to tell you, as I say, this episode is primarily haunted house themed, and I love stuff like that. Although, I would say if I was dad and that happened to me, I would be going out for a pack of smokes and not coming back. And no, not a jury in the world would convict you. They'd be like, what? The light did what? Yep, not guilty. I don't know why you'd be on trial for this, but if you were, the judge would not guilty.
For abandonment.
There we go.
He was last found crying in Denny's.
Well, that is where you go to cry, I'll be honest. Middle of the night, you want to cry? Denny's.
Finding weird rooms in a house where you're not supposed to them is something I always find very interesting, because we had one in our haunted house.
Yeah, that was the little room in the bathroom, right?
Yeah, with the door halfway up the wall, the little bed and the table in it covered in dust.
You literally had Harry Potter's closet in your bathroom.
It's not all we had in that bathroom. The haunted.
Dare I ask?
The haunted flush.
Oh, right. Of course. There you go. I was listening to a podcast recently, and I'm kind of curious to hear your take on this. The podcast is, it's a podcast oddly about fatherhood, which of course I'm not, but I find podcasts about being a man in 2023 interesting, you know, especially when it's not from douchebags. You know, when it's good men talking about what it is to be a good man in 2023, I find that really interesting. And they were talking about stuff from the past, and they asked the question, do you think that future generations, you know, our kids and their kids, will look back at the stuff we have now with the same fascination that we did when we were kids, and we would find, you know, a bunch of our parents' old stuff in a basement? If we find a room walled off, will they be as entranced with the stuff in there? Or is that, was that specifically because older furniture was cooler? Or are they going to find my, you know, my cheap shit Amazon tripod just as interesting as I found the gumball machine I dug out of the basement in 1990? What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think that the sense of wonder doesn't change through generation to generation. We just find different things intriguing, don't we?
Yeah. I'm just imagining someone pulling out an old laptop. That doesn't seem as interesting to me as, you know, a gumball machine or, oh, look, this one of those evil maiming dart sets, lawn dart sets that Mark Semler recently sent us a meme about, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it might be one of those things because obviously the thing we have is that things go out of fashion and then they come back, don't they? I mean, right. Can you imagine 30 years ago when everybody was buying CDs and you'd be, somebody said to you, 30 years time, there won't be enough vinyl factories in the world to keep up with demand? And you'd be like, shut up, you idiot. We're all going to the future. We're all going to be listening to music on chips. What are you talking about, you idiot?
There's a lot of aggression in your future. It's very Back to the Future 2 Biff timeline.
I'm just kind of pondering how a young person would respond at that point when you're holding a CD and somebody would say, you know, in 30 years' time, people aren't going to be buying them. They're going to be buying those things that CDs replaced.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, who buys CDs?
Yeah, no, that's very true. The only time I buy a CD now is if there's a band who I want to support and they don't have, you know, if they don't have enough money to have vinyl pressed, then I'll buy one of their CDs. But I mean, here where I'm living currently, I don't think I have anything to play a CD with. You know, I'd have to just spin it on my finger and shine a flashlight on the goddamn thing and hope for the best.
It's not like the good old days when you could stick it in your PS2 and that strange screen would appear with all the fireworks exploding on your screen.
It was a better time. The PS4 might play CDs. I'm not sure. I haven't tried. It plays movies, so I assume it plays CDs.
No, I've had mine 7 years. I don't think I've ever played a CD on it. It plays DVDs, so I can't see why it wouldn't.
Yeah, that's it. I don't know. I guess why would you? I mean, I used to collect CDs. I at one point had about 500 CDs. And then I just stopped because I wasn't listening to them as much. And then I just realized it just became about accumulation. I didn't value these things. It was like I would always want more and collect them. And so I sold a bunch. I still have lots in my closet back in Victoria that I'm trying to sell. But if you told me that I'd be swapping that up for a very, very highly curated vinyl collection, I would have thought you were nuts. Where were we? Someone wrote us a Stennis story. That's where all this started.
The Shadow Visitor from Sydney. This is the story that always stands out to me as the strangest, most unsettling paranormal experience I've ever had. I've shared this a few times and got some interesting interpretations, which I'll share at the end, but I'm curious to hear what you think. I am the oldest of four children. My sister and I are close in age, and then there is a large gap between us and our two younger siblings. We were prepping for a trip to the mainland for groceries, and my mum was wrestling my brother back into his socks and shoes for what was probably the 1,000th time in the hour it had taken us to get ready. While she did that, she asked me to run around to the back of the house to secure the gates and make sure our dogs stayed in the yard. Our house is in a secluded rural area, and there is a public hiking trail behind us, so we had a gate from the side yard into the backyard, and another from the backyard to a small personal trail that leads to the public one. The size of our house and the layout of the lot meant that once you stepped into the side yard, you couldn't be seen from the front yard. I ran to the first gate, which was open, and slammed it shut. I remember being unusually focused on closing it and the satisfying click of it locking into place, only to look up and realise that the one across the way, leading to the trail, was also sitting wide open. So I opened the first gate again and started my way towards the back gate. Our yard was sloped, and always more rock and dirt than grass thanks to the abundance of huge old trees pressing in on us from all sides. And there were often more than a few doggy landmines scattered throughout the yard, so I was focused on my feet when I felt a creeping sensation wash over me. I looked up and saw it, a tall black shadow. I remember it was human-shaped but quite tall, and the darkest black I'd ever seen. It didn't seem real, but it was so dark and so solid-seeming There was sunlight streaming down through the trees, but I didn't see a shadow, and the light didn't touch it. The shadow was looking up through the picture windows in our second-story living room, and it seemed to be almost in awe. It was fully consumed in staring up into that window, like it was seeing something beyond the picture window. I stopped in my tracks and just felt pure, blinding rage building up inside of me. A very primal, get-the-fuck-off-my-land sort of feeling, which, being around 8 or so, and a very shy, quiet, well-mannered child, was really unusual for me. The shadow looked at me and seemed to do a double take, as if shocked. Then it was just gone. I was a big lover of high fantasy novels, so I was expecting some kind of like puff of smoke or sound or something. But it was just 1 second completely physically there, and the next just gone. Powered by this unfamiliar rage, I ran to and past the gate, peeking behind the nearest trees, as if the shadow was just going to be standing there sheepishly. But there was nothing there. I slammed the gate shut, glanced over my shoulder, and returned to my mum. I didn't tell her about it then, partially because she was preoccupied and unlikely to believe me, and partially because I was still so confused about what had happened. This may be entirely unrelated, but my dad passed away suddenly at home. He'd been given 6 months but ended up passing a little over a month after the news, and we knew he wasn't doing well, but he went from seemingly okay and up and chatting to completely gone in a matter of hours. Much of the time he'd had cancer, and especially at the end, he couldn't lay flat, so he'd been sleeping in his recliner in the living room. So the shadow was basically looking directly into the spot where Dad would pass 20 years later. People have said it could be anything from a death spectator to it being my dad himself, but nothing explains that sheer overwhelming rage I felt. I'm curious to know if you've heard anything like this before.
So, Senior, thank you very much, and we share another one of your stories later in the show. It sounds like the land that this house is on is extremely powerful. Like, there's a lot going on there, is what I'm saying. There's a story that is told later where something very angry is present. And I don't know, I kind of think, I don't necessarily, I mean, I hesitate to connect it to your father's death just because it's 20 years in the future. I mean, there's a lot of things that could be happening in any one given spot. But if, I mean, the shock in from the thing you saw after you reacted to it, I mean, that could just be the thing itself being stunned that it's visible to someone. And I mean, the rage, that could also just be a child's sense of, some people who are really shy and quiet actually have quite a protective instinct to them.
I'm the same. I would not connect that with the father's passing at all. I think the fact it was looking through the window is inconsequential in regards to future events, because who would know how her father would pass away or where or when, really? And the behavior of it seems like it just seemed surprised to be there, especially seemed surprised to see Sinye. So I think there's not much connection there. If anything, I think it's something that just wandering through for some reason. And feeling angry, I know fear can lead to anger. So maybe the fear burst out in an angry protective response because of the shock of seeing something so unusual.
Yeah. I mean, as you say, it's shock. It makes me think there's nothing malevolent going on here.
Nothing what?
Malevolent?
But no, I agree.
Imagine being a ghost, though, because that'd be 100% what I'd be doing as a ghost. I'd be creeping in people's windows. But imagine, you know, you're dead. You figure, well, now's my time to shine. And so you just start creeping everywhere. You're perving around the globe in shadow form. But then someone sees you. Imagine your shock, because all of a sudden you think, shit, how many people have seen me doing this? You know, it's like having a dream. I don't know if you ever had a dream where you, no, never mind. Let's not delve into this. Let's not learn any more about me.
I mean, how do we not know that, as we were talking on the last story about a sense of wonder, of discovering things, how do we not know that that was what was going on there? And that's why it was so interested in it. It was like, wow, what's this?
Yeah, yeah, it could very well be. I mean, again, who knows if this is a person, like someone who was a person, or something else entirely beyond our sort of sense of understanding. They could have just been marveling at the world, which is not to invalidate your reactions, I mean, it's perfectly normal to want to defend your home from an outsider. But I do wonder if it was just sort of a traveler moving through.
I often like to look at it from this point that we often don't take into consideration the reactions of these visitors, because there is often that theory of time slips and things like that. How do we not know that they were as surprised as you were, because they dropped into something where they were like, what's this house doing here? This house has never been here. What's all this about?
Yeah, a lot of possibilities there.
Mm.
So again, absolutely. Thank you for sharing, Sinha, and we look forward to sharing your second story towards the end of the show.
You could always tell we were going to get a good story with someone with such a fabulous Scandinavian name.
Yes, I had to look up the pronunciation, which I noticed you did not, and I hate you.
Sorry.
No, you're not.
No.
Since humanity first gathered around a campfire, we've been sharing stories to freak each other out and spark the darker side of our imaginations. So, if you're interested in hearing more about the ghostly, ghastly, and grotesque, we're excited to tell you about Fear, a curated collection of frightening fiction stories from Realm. Think of it as your podcast version of that campfire circle, with each season bringing you a new tale to both entertain and haunt you. And we think you're going to love Fear's current season, Beatrix Green. Beatrix knows the seances she conducts are fake, but financial freedom for a single woman in Victorian England is hard to come by. So when a notorious scientist makes her a proposition, prove that ghosts are real once and for all, for a hefty price, she can't resist the temptation. But the ghosts turn out to be very real, and they must work together, or risk being the haunting's next victims. You can listen to Beatrix Green and all the other spooky stories on Fear, available wherever you get your podcasts, or at realm.fm.
The House, from Anonymous. My husband and I were house-sitting for a friend of family. We've been doing this for the multiple times a year for at least the last 8 years. They'd leave for 6 to 8 weeks at a time and leave us with their two dogs. Here's what you need to know about this house. It was a brand new build about 10 years ago, and the land was a farmer's field before that. It's in a small rural town about 40 minutes from a major city. The couple who live here don't believe in the paranormal. Interestingly enough, they tend to bring home strange trinkets from their trips that have weird vibes. Some of these things give me the creeps. They even creep out my husband, who is very much a skeptic. I blame the trinkets for the weird that goes on in this place. I'm going to try and quickly list some of the weird things that have happened, and then tell you about the most recent experience. There are places in the house that we just avoid. The basement used to be welcoming when we first started house sitting. Then about 2 years in, the feel completely changed. Now we avoid it. The dogs don't even want to go down there for very long. The wife's office is oppressive. It feels like there's something in there hovering over your shoulder. For a year or so, I just couldn't go into the wife's office. If I did go in, the whole house would feel heavy after. It got to the point that when I would first arrive at the house, I would make a deal with the energies. I would say something like, "Hey house, I'm going to be here for X amount of time. We can coexist together. I won't go in so-and-so's office, as long as you don't bother me. I don't want to see or hear you." Unfortunately, sometimes I have to use the printer in that office. At that point, I announce myself, let the house know I will be in there for X amount of time, and apologize for the inconvenience. It sounds ridiculous when I type it out, but that's what needed to be done. The older dog stares at things on the stairs that I can't see. Sometimes I can even see her tracking something with her eyes. About 4 years ago, I was looking for muffin pans and had searched multiple cupboards. I was reaching for another door when I heard from right beside me, "Not there." This was shocking, but it didn't feel scary. I said, "Thank you," and moved on to the next cupboard, and there were the muffin pans. The energy has been feeling heavier the last few times we've been there. Recently, I've noticed that my mental health suffers more when we are there. At first, I thought this was just because it was winter most times we were there, and my depression is worse then, but I've noticed a pattern. This last time was particularly bad. I had been making some real progress with my mental health, and then we went there, and I was thrown back into the deep, dark hole of depression and intrusive thoughts. Within days of leaving the house, I was back to how I had been feeling before we were house-sitting. Obviously, I understand that mental health and healing is basically this roller coaster ride of ups and downs, but this experience was abnormal, and I think the house exacerbated the issue. Anyways, moving on. We arrived at the house in early to mid-November and stayed there until just before Christmas. The first week or so we were there, I was standing in the kitchen working around 11 a.m. From the corner of my eye, I watched the SodaStream machine move. It scooted across the corner about 10 centimeters. I heard it move as well. That freaked me out. A lot of weird things have happened in my life, but I think that's the first time I've really seen something move in real time. I stood there just staring at this thing, trying to rationalize what happened. I went through, oh, maybe it was a reflection from something moving outside. Maybe there was water on the counter and it slid. All that random stuff you tell yourself. But once I got over the shock and took a closer look, it had actually moved. It was no longer straight. It was on an angle and had moved to the left. I checked for water. I banged on the counter. I lightly pushed it. That thing was not easy to slide. Once I realized I couldn't explain how it moved, I did the crazy thing and yelled at the SodaStream. I sternly told it and the house that I didn't appreciate its nonsense. I didn't want to see things, I didn't want to hear things, and they could fuck right off. I never saw anything else move after that, but things still happened. For example, a few days after that, the kitchen sink came on by itself. The week after that, I was sitting at the dining room table on a Friday or Saturday night, finishing up some work I'd been procrastinating on. I could feel the energy in the house change and start building, like it was ramping up to do something. There was that weird charge in the air. It felt like I had to get out, like something was driving me out. I had that instinctual desire to just get up and flee the house. Being the silly person that I am, I refused to let this house get the best of me, so I told it to wait, as I was almost done what I was doing, and then I would leave for a few hours. Thankfully, nothing happened, but that desire to flee never left. Once I was done, I left and went to a friend's place for a few hours. It felt like I was chased out the door. You know that feeling when you've turned the light off in a creepy basement and have to run up the stairs in the dark and you're afraid to look back because you swear there's something just behind you? It felt like that. When I came home around midnight, nothing was amiss, and I was shocked. The next thing could be weird electrical, but I'm not really sure. There was a snowstorm, and the power had been flicked off and on a couple times early that morning. We had already been at the house for at least 3 to 4 weeks. The alarm in the master bedroom, that I don't sleep in and rarely even go into, started going off. It was on the radio setting, so all of a sudden at 5 a.m. I can hear voices. I am a coward and sent my husband out to take a look. He turned the alarm off. Later that evening, it went off again. I went up and turned it off this time. The following day it went off again, and again my husband turned it off. These were all at random times. Now, you can definitely argue that this was just because the power went off and the clock was never reset, but later my husband told me he had flicked the toggle switch on the back to turn it off each time. This whole house is set up to just be creepy. Weird trinkets everywhere, and the two spare rooms upstairs are strange. The couple's son has named the rooms, the Creepy Doll Room and the Hall of Mirrors. Honestly, I can't even make this shit up. One room is full of old stuffed animals and dolls with old black and white family pictures on the wall. The other room has at least 5 mirrors in it. It's hard to choose which room to sleep in, but we go for the Hall of Mirrors? Jesus Christ, you're braver than I am, Anonymous. Thankfully, nothing bad has happened in our rooms. Well, hallelujah. It's never even felt bad to me. Perhaps that is because of my own grounding and protecting practices. I actually stopped listening to your podcast because I was worried it would trigger more activity. Like attracts like, right? I'm not sure it made a difference. Just another reason to be mad at the house. I could be caught up if I had listened for those 6 weeks. It's unlikely we will house it again. I say that every time, but I think I mean it this time. I've already turned down the next time they travel. The whole feel of the house is weirder than it's ever been. I've contemplated cleansing the house, but it's so big and there's so much stuff, I feel like it would be getting it over my head if there is something there that wants to stay. And Anonymous, man, there's so much there. One of the things I wanted to say is, first off, is I think it's a good idea not to spend more time there. Because, you know, if a place is like, if a place is spiritually not good for you, it doesn't matter how much you protect, that will eventually seep in for you in some way, especially if you're like me, and it sounds like you are, you struggle sometimes with mental health and intrusive thoughts. I very much have that problem, and I have to really be careful about where I spend my time. Before I go on, Paul, do you have any thoughts?
Well, you always have to be careful because many experiences over the years have always talks about feeling drained or affecting people's personalities and trains of thought. So wouldn't be the first time I've heard of someone having negative thoughts through a haunting experience.
Yeah. I'm always wary of people who say, well, I'm not afraid of anything. Sometimes you should be. You know, fear is a healthy, useful emotion. It's a useful tool. It's, you know, there's no moral failing attached to it. You know, I mean, to live in fear, to be ruled by fear, that's no good. But fear is a useful thing, and to be aware of it is very smart. You know, I just finished a little while ago reading this book, Highway of Tears by Jessica McDiarmid, and it's sort of a look into the missing and murdered women up in northern BC along the Highway of Tears. And, you know, what's happening up there is complex. You know, it's not as simple as, oh, there's one crazy evil serial killer roaming around. There's a lot of socioeconomic issues that are causing these women to be murdered. I mean, there are people murdering them, and that's too passive. They're being murdered. They're being murdered by men. They're being murdered in some cases by women, and some cases by people they know. But one of the things that kept coming up in the victim studies in the book was the author would quote the family and friends as saying, she wasn't afraid of anything. And now I'm not in any way blaming the victim for their murder, because that's bullshit. But I will say, it's not a good thing to never be afraid. Hmm. You know, be smart with how you apply your fear, and you'll live a hell of a lot longer. But again, that's not saying that the victims in any way were responsible for what happened to them. They were not. That is solely on the perpetrator of the crime. But it was just one of those things, right? I got me thinking about how we love to minimize the role of fear and pretend like any evidence of fear is weakness, but that is just smart. Fear is just smart. And on the subject of energy, you know, Anonymous, you might remember me talking about going to the pub quite a bit. You know, when I was first living in Montreal here, I would go to the pub, you know, four times a week, just something to do, right? I had found this local I quite enjoyed. And I did. It was welcoming. I would stay there till, you know, midnight one. I'd read books, you just have a beer, kind of watch the crowd. But my friend, who I'd also go there with sometimes, we noticed that something changed. Something changed. And if we were there on a busy night, it didn't matter how good a mood I was in to start with, after a little while there, it would start to shift. Mm-hmm. And we noticed that everyone who worked there seemed, it was after Halloween, everyone seemed much less happy. They seemed much less, everyone was just angrier and sadder. And it was just like there was a whole vibe change in the place. And my friend and I have a great time when we go out together, you know, we shoot the shit, you know, we have a great time. But after a while, when the environment had soured so much, it started to even affect us. And so I think, yeah, when you go someplace, it doesn't matter how resistant you are. After a while, if you're there long enough, it's just going to get through.
Mm. Definitely. It can be a slow, steady trickle as well. Sometimes people presume it's just going to be a big of negativity, and often it can be a very small chipping away that builds up over time.
Yeah, and that's almost the more, I think that's actually the more dangerous one, because, you know, it's like Anonymous said, you know, I'm not going to go back anymore. And then you kind of, after a while, you think, oh no, maybe I'll go back. I'll house sit again. Yeah. But
what's the worst thing,
you know, yeah, that's it. And it's a slow kind of soul poisoning. And again, it's especially dangerous when you have intrusive thoughts. Like there are times, man, where the intrusive thoughts are, and they're never good. It's never an intrusive thought. Like, boy, what a great day. Let's go get tacos. You know, it's always like, you're a piece of shit. You should stop doing everything. And, you know, and I know it's coming from you, but there are times where it's like, it's coming from outside you.
Yeah.
It'll come in unbidden, you know, just pop into my head. And I know if I'm in a place that, again, like that bar, you know, I would really start getting a lot of intrusive thoughts after a while. After being in there, these really negative thoughts. And, you know, no one was being shitty to me, but there was just this air of unhappiness in the place. And I just think the less time you spend there, the better. And this might also be overstepping, Anonymous. So, you know, you can write me an email, tell me to go fuck off, but it wouldn't be the only one lately. But
sorry about that.
The email I expected, I didn't expect the singing telegram too. I mean, that was a lot. I respect the game, but damn. But I'm curious to know about your friend's relationship and how well that's going for them. You know, like what their dynamic is like, and how happy they are together at the moment. No, don't. This is not information I need, but I'm just curious. You know, because I do know sometimes if you're in a domestic situation with someone and things are not great, that can leave a kind of fog. Or if even if things are good, if they may not believe in the paranormal, but it's not impossible that they are also affected by it.
Well, just because you don't believe in it doesn't mean it's not happening.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, I've told this story before, but I have a friend who works in the mental health field, and they told me that, you know, this person's very sensitive, and they said, you know, most of the time my job is just triaging people and sending them to see a mental health professional. But they said sometimes someone comes in and I can visually see an entity hanging off them. I can see that you know, their problem is not caused by chemical imbalance or by lifestyle situation, by life situation. It is literally being caused by an entity sucking the life out of them. Mm-hmm. And I can't do anything about it. You know, I can't tell them, oh, just, you know, maybe try X or Y. She just says, I, you know, because that is not my job. My job is to send people to the therapist who will then, you know, prescribe the meds or you know, some combination of treatments. But, you know, they are aware that there is this extra, you know, external dimension, and they are helpless in the face of it. And again, I do think that has some bearing on some of these issues.
A good old fashioned haunted house from Tracy. I live in Toronto, Ontario, and had the blessing of moving into High Park in Toronto when I first arrived here in the late 90s. High Park is one of Toronto's original neighbourhoods, with grand three-storey brick homes that are rarely held as personal homes any longer, with most having been converted to multiple rental dwellings over the years. When I first moved to Toronto to join my boyfriend, now husband, we were living in the basement apartment of one such three-storey house. The main floor was another apartment, and the upper two storeys were the third. It was a lovely house, great tenants, and an awesome landlord. I'll set up the visual of the apartment so that the story may make better sense. Our entry door was on the side of the house. Upon entering, you stood on a landing that had six or so stairs leading down into our apartment with open railings on either side. On this same landing were two additional stairs to the left, which led upwards into the drywall. Back when it was a single family house, this would have been the original staircase from the main floor to the basement. The stairs leading into the wall made for a handy spot to store shoes, and we gave it no thought. Upon descending the stairs into our apartment, you would have the living room, office space to the right, and to the left was the kitchen, and beyond that, the bedroom. In the kitchen, we kept an answering machine just beside the fridge and outside our bedroom door. Yes, this was the 90s, and answering machines were still a thing, but we had subscribed to a telephone answering service and turned the answering machine off, leaving it plugged in, but collecting dust. The apartment was long and somewhat narrow. This meant that when lying in bed, you could sit up and see straight down the length of the apartment to the television in the living room area if the bedroom door was open. One of the first experiences I had was upon returning home one day mid-afternoon, and I thought I would enjoy a moment to watch TV and relax for a bit. Sitting in my living room, with my head turned slightly to the left to observe the TV, the stairs were to my right. Unexpectedly, I noticed what appeared to be a shadow or shape in my periphery at the top of the stairs on the landing. The motion of this shape appeared around the corner from my stairs and then continued further up the two stairs that led to the drywall. In hindsight, it was though someone had gone up the original basement stairwell and continued through the drywall up into the main floor. I fully convinced myself that I was seeing things, but I couldn't explain it away as a trick of light, as the house beside ours was quite close, and sunlight never shone between the two homes. Either way, it was a moment, and quickly forgotten. A second experience occurred when I was home alone one evening as my boyfriend had gone out of town for the weekend. Our office area was the same end of the apartment as the living room, but on the other side. When sitting at the computer desk, you were facing the wall with the rest of the open space behind you, the living room area to the left. I was up late one night exploring the new computer and internet that we now had, and was fully engrossed in writing and exploring, paying zero attention to my surroundings. I experienced what I'd call a full interruption in mid-thought by a very strong feeling of cold and that someone was standing behind me. I sat up straight, remaining forward toward the computer, and took a pause to collect my bearings. I didn't want to turn around, but I clearly felt the presence of someone. Not a scary feeling other than the interruption, and the clear feeling of being with unexpected company. I remember using my aunt's advice and saying out loud, "I don't want to see you. I'm not ready for that," to encourage whoever or whatever was there to move along. Suddenly, the chill feeling dissipated, and I felt my hackles settling back down. After another moment, I turned around to check the space, and of course, there was nothing. At no point in either of these experiences did I sense any malice, just the presence of someone else. A third experience occurred when my boyfriend and I were in bed. I often settled early and was sleeping before he came to bed. He was a night owl. Because of this, he would stay up and watch TV quietly so not to disturb my sleep. I've never slept well, and the environment needed to be quiet and dark. He had come to bed at some point, and we were both soundly sleeping, when all of a sudden, our TV at the other end of the apartment came on full blast. The volume may have disturbed our upstairs neighbours, it was that loud. Definitely not the volume he had had on the TV before coming to bed. We both sat straight upright in bed, and it took a few moments to process what was happening. My boyfriend got out of bed to turn the TV off, and after turning the volume down to a normal level before doing so, he tried to explain it away as a fluke, but it was not terribly convincing. A fourth experience occurred whilst I was in the bathroom, which was just outside our bedroom, with the door facing the kitchen area. My boyfriend was doing dishes when I heard him say, "What?" I didn't answer because I assumed he was responding to the TV or something, as he certainly would not be engaging with me while I was using the washroom, and had said nothing to merit his query. A moment later, he yells louder, "What?" And I again ignored him. Within the next minute, he suddenly opens the bathroom door and asks, "What do you want?" I first berated him for disturbing me and asked him what he was talking about. He said I'd called his name three different times and he heard my voice clearly coming from the bathroom door. He thought I'd been teasing. I explained that I definitely had not called him at any time and I didn't appreciate the interruption whilst in the bathroom. When I came out, he confronted me on the practical joke he thought I was playing on him, and upon seeing my face denying the allegation, he became quiet. This was my fourth experience with unexplainable things, but only his second. He couldn't explain it, but was not willing to assume anything paranormal, so it simply got ignored again. The final experience was the most baffling. Again, I had returned home from work midday. Per usual, I descended the stairs and made my way to the left to go back to the bedroom to change my clothes. As I walked past the open kitchen and into our bedroom, my periphery noticed something, and I backed up two steps into the kitchen area again. The answering machine that I previously described as being powered off and collecting dust on the counter beside the fridge was blinking a red light indicating a new message. I froze. Not only was the unit turned off, but it was also collecting dust, completely unused for some time. It felt like I'd stood there for several minutes before reaching out to push the play button. When I did, I heard about 20 or 30 seconds of scratchy static and nothing else. The message concluded itself and silence returned. I noted that my two touches were the only marks in the dust of the machine, clearly not having been physically touched by anyone other than myself. We moved from this apartment not long after. Not due to this. It never felt malevolent. The presence... fuck off. The presence as I... the presence, as I grew to call it, felt feminine, and it felt like the efforts to make itself known were escalating. I've always been curious what may have continued to happen had we stayed. I got the sense that it was simply a previous female who had lived in the house, when it was a full home and not just apartments. I hope she found peace in the afterlife, and that her visits were simply meant to communicate she was still there.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Tracy.
I always like anything that involves a paranormal reaction to electrical items in such ways.
It's like the answering machine, for example?
Mm-hmm. And the TV.
Oh, yeah.
I had a very similar experience in a shared house involving a music station, which I may have mentioned previously, where we were sat around talking, listening to music, and then we decided to turn the CD player off. So you go back to CDs again. Turn the CD player off, and we were playing PlayStation, I think. I think we were playing on the PlayStation or something. And we were sat talking 10, 15 minutes, and then the CD player came on, just burst into life, full whack, but it started on track 10, which it hadn't been on when we turned it off.
Right.
And the way the CD player worked, if you turned it back on, it wouldn't physically start unless you pressed play. And if you did press play, it started at track 1. It would never remember a track it had been on before being turned off. It would always start again at the beginning, and you had to skip forward to get there. So we tried everything to replicate it, and we couldn't make it do that at all. And even if it had been a power surge, I find it very hard to believe that a power surge would specifically choose track 10 on an album.
Maybe it really thought that song was a banger.
Well, it was. It's a very good album. Cast by Cast. But I, as with anything like that, I would always try and explain it and work out and see. And when I couldn't figure out how it had happened, I just went, that's weird. But obviously weird that's probably a ghost telling us which track it preferred.
Yeah.
Not that. Oh, that's a bit odd. I'd go, well, the ghost wants to listen to that song. Find it. Fair enough. No problem.
I will say that's, I think, a bit of a problem for us, you know, because we steep in this stuff, because this is kind of our, you know, represents a large part of our lives. Stuff that other people would have this really intense reaction to, we just kind of go, yeah, that happens. So what's for dinner? You know,
I mean, even TVs are a prime example of that. Even these days, yes, if you turn your telly on, mine, if I turn it off and I turn it back on, it will return to the volume it was on before it was turned off. So how a TV that was turned off would then burst into life at full volume, I just can't explain.
It's almost like, you know, whatever is happening, it's hard to do it subtly. You know, it's you have to exert so much force in order to make something happen that it just, everything comes on at maximum. You know, you can't just like lightly flip on a button. It's either all or nothing.
So maybe what was over there just didn't understand what these things were, and that's why it came on, because they were like, oh, what's this do?
Boom.
Yeah.
I was also thinking, what a pure innocent time when we would just turn on the computer and say, what's this internet stuff all about?
That's probably why she was coming home at midday, because it'd take 3 hours for something to load up.
By the time I finished my first shift, that JPEG was done loading.
I just logged on to Geosites.
Oh, man. Yeah, I was waiting for my real player to finish buffering.
I opened up my AOL connection.
Oh, we're dating ourselves here. I remember when email came to my elementary school, and I got an email pen pal, and that's all it was good for. It was just email. It was just like an intranet kind of thing. And this just blew our minds. And, you know, oh, you've got a pen pal, and she's all the way in the school up on the hill, and you'll just send these electronic messages to each other. Ooh. And and it was funny because they tried to partner the kids up with people who were, you know, like you. So the person I got is actually someone who, funny enough, we still live in Victoria in the same building after having been pen pals in Revelstoke 150 years ago. But they gave me a second pen pal because I was faster at reading and typing and stuff. And it was almost like they didn't have anyone else to give this kid to, because the teacher even kind of sheepishly said, well, we know this isn't really kind of your thing, but Jimmy likes baseball and stealing cars, or, you know, whatever it was. It was something very unlike me, you know. he likes paying homeless men to fight for scraps of cheese. And I just remember this guy would send me these messages, and it would be like, well, you know, today we took the tires off the truck and, you know, we fought the jets in a dance battle down on the docks. You know, it was a completely, completely different experience from mine. You know? Yeah. It was not a love connection. We'll say that much. It's funny. I actually think about a lot of the guys I went to school with, and I think, how many of these guys are in prison now? You know, like, there was one guy I went to school with. Dave, no, it was Dave's cousin. I can't remember the guy's name, but he ended up on Crime Stoppers. And Dan was this guy's name, Dan.
Dodgy Dan.
He was Dodgy Dan. And I remember Dave got a hold of me. He said, "Hey, Bren, my cousin's on Crime Stoppers. I know where he is, and I really want a new snowmobile. You think it would be shitty to turn him in? Because there's a cash reward." I said, "No, man, go for it. Get your snowmobile. Whatever it is he's done, odds are he deserves this."
Mm. Does that family only like the letter D?
It makes it easy to remember.
It's his dad called Darren.
Dad was also Dave.
It's like a friend of mine. His parents are called Paul and Paula.
That's not fair.
Mm, strange.
Wait, the parents are Paul and Paula, or the kids are Paul and Paula?
Paul and Paula are the parents.
Wow.
Yeah, he doesn't listen to the show, so I can say. He lives around the corner from where I am right now, but he doesn't listen to the show. But he's my occasional drinking buddy in the local hostelries, and known each other a long time. So it's quite funny. We live around the corner from each other. It's quite strange.
Well, we had Dan, Dave, and Dave.
Daryl.
Daryl. I did go to school with a Daryl. Different guy. I actually had another girl I went to school with. Very, very lovely. Very beautiful. Not a great person. But I shouldn't say that. I didn't really know her very well. She had it hard coming up. I don't want to be shitty. Hmm. But she also was on Crime Stoppers one time. I'll never forget that, turning on the television. Oh. Yeah, it occurs to me now. I had, you know, a small town like that. A lot of people, you look back and think, yeah, I wonder what crimes it was you were convicted of. Mm-hmm. Like I used to hang out with these guys, Russell and Bobby, and they lived in a trailer in the middle of a field with their parents, but they're the kind of kids that parents were never home. So I just remember going over to Russell and Bobby's house, or the trailer in the middle of this field, and they were just, yeah, it was like Lord of the Flies. You could just do whatever the fuck you wanted. And I'm not sure. I didn't hang out with them long, probably for a reason. But you know, they struck me as the kind of kids where, like, whatever you want could be either cereal for dinner and video games, or trying to insert firecrackers into animals. Yeah, like it just struck me as it could go either way. And I'm not really sure which way they leaned. I did know two guys who did the firecracker thing. They were garbage. But anyways, this has all gotten very strange.
Yes, very much so. Even I'm traumatized.
Yeah, and you put cow's eyeballs through letterboxes.
Yeah, but you know, I didn't kill a cow to do it.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, no, I wasn't making it a one-to-one comparison. No.
Run around with a spoon.
Come here, Flossie.
Listen, I've nearly been killed by cows, so I respect them.
That's right. We have an understanding.
Yeah, that's one of the most terrifying moments of my life.
When you were nearly killed by the cow.
Cows. I was.
Cows, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A herd of cows stampeded towards me and tried to trample us.
Well, I remember after we told that story in the show, someone commented and said, that's something that happens. Like, yeah, people are killed by cows every year.
Yeah, it happens more than it people were aware of. I think something ridiculous like 6 people last year in the UK were killed by cows.
That's mad.
Not bulls, cows.
I guess we've done so much bad shit to cows that we've just got it coming. They're just building the tide. Cows with Guns was not a novelty song by Dr. Demento. That was a prophecy.
And, you know, I was with my dog at the time and never let him off in a field where there were calves or anything, because you don't want to scare any animals like that and respect them. And they ran half a mile to get us, bastards. I am not exaggerating. We got away with the skin of his teeth. If we'd have been a second slower, we'd have been seriously hurt easily.
Holy shit. I didn't realize it was that close.
Yeah. And the fuck has followed us into a wood. Have you ever seen a cow in a wood? The fuck's all that way? The fucker. We had to run around this thing and it went down this staircase, down onto this stream. And one of the fuckers was just stood at the top, staring at us like Jaws. Bastard. I was expecting it to come down the fucking stairs the way it was acting. I was like, fucking hell, I'm going to have to fight a cow. One, I might have a chance with. I'm not fighting a herd. One, come on. Have some of that, son.
You know, well, I do not advocate cruelty to animals. Part of me does want to see you box a cow.
Only in the reasons of self-defense. I would never willingly pick a fight with a cow.
No, of course.
So yes, be aware. Cows can kill.
I have no idea how we got here from a haunted house, but thank you, Tracy. I think, is that still the story we're doing? Tracy, Hyde Park? Hyde Park? Jesus Christ. That was a journey.
Yes. It was you and your dodgy school friends.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's it. Firecrackers. Yep. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. The Pit from Senia. This will be our last story for the night. This one could probably be classed as a dream, but it was exceptionally unsettling, so I'm including it. My grandma was a remarkable and remarkably strange, wild, witchy woman. She had a connection with the earth, particularly her property, on the same island as I've mentioned in my other stories, that I can only classify as magical. She was always outside doing something, be it puttering in her garden, mowing the several acre property, fussing with her elderly apple trees, or dragging her trampoline around the yard. We slept on that thing more often than a bed during the summer, and the land always felt warm, welcoming, and magical. This was definitely partly her. She made us dance to call the rain or sun, threw huge parties when the power went out and it was stormy, was constantly pranking people, and specialized in making a delicious stone soup. Soup from a stone, or so she said. She even had a sleep monster that would doodle elaborate, beautiful designs on us when we slept. I still haven't figured out how she managed that, since the handwriting and drawings never looked like hers. But there was always a deeper something there, too. Her house was my safe place, a fun place where nothing could get me, and I would roam the hilly landscape, play in the deep pond, and snooze under the weeping willows. The first time I set foot on her property after she passed, the grief hit me like a ton of bricks. I felt like all the light and warmth had been sucked out, leaving it hollow and empty. But this grief felt like it was more somehow. Having lost my dad and then my grandma's husband, I was becoming quite used to grief and how I processed it, and this felt so much bigger than me. It was like the ground itself was keening in pain, and the house felt so lonely it made me cry. Perhaps it was truly my own grief manifesting, but it honestly felt like there was something on the property that was mourning her as much as we were. I've always considered myself a bit sensitive, and the emotions that came crashing in were so strong. This thing felt old, ancient even, and I felt a mix of rage and desperation, this aching loneliness that made it want to rip things apart and scream. I normally roamed all over the property, but this time I barely left the house as we quietly packed up the remnants of her life. Even trips to put things in the truck felt risky. Several weeks later, my aunt and I were discussing the land, and I mentioned how I'd felt that day. She agreed, saying she'd felt the same and had every time she'd been back. I only managed to go back to once. It was just too much for me. But she visited frequently to make repairs and check on the place. After our talk, I had an idea. I got into a comfortable position and did my usual meditation routine, but this time I went to walk Grandma's property in my mind. As soon as I set foot on the edge of her property, I felt as if something took hold of me and drug me, against my will, to the aquifer in the back left corner of the property. Aquifers are quite common on the island. They're basically huge holes in the ground, sometimes man-made with concrete, as in the case of Grandma's property, or sometimes they're natural, and they have huge stores of stagnant water. They're very still and have a somewhat unsettling vibe, even in the best circumstances. In all the ones I've seen, I've always imagined something lurking underneath the surface, watching and waiting for someone to get close enough to drag in. But this time I was particularly frightened. I went down under the surface, the dark, clinging muck surrounding me while something held me and squeezed me and growled with rage. I felt like I was dying, like I was drowning. And then I woke up to my normally very sweet ginger tabby bopping me on the nose and hissing, something she rarely does. My grandma is Danish, and I know they have a history with land whites, which is the best way I can describe what I felt. This was something old that wasn't human and had never been human, and it had lost someone it had a profound partnership with. My grandma's passing was very abrupt. She basically got sick, was diagnosed with cancer, and then passed in a matter of hours, so I don't think any of us really had a chance to process what was happening, the land included. I've not tried to visit the property again since, and wonder if the new people renting the house have experienced anything. I'm sure Grandma's spirit is keeping the house safe and comfortable for them. She was always a great hostess, and happiest with a full house. But the land I'm not so sure about. And Senia, that is incredible. That's a fantastic story. And, you know, we're not big fans of saying something is just a dream on the show. And yeah, I was just engrossed with that. Paul, what are your thoughts?
Incredible, isn't it? And like you say, people always dismiss it. Go, are you sure you weren't dreaming? It's all in your mind. No.
Are you familiar with the term land white?
No.
Interesting. Let's have a quick look here. Spirits of the land in Norse mythology. There we go. They promote and they protect and promote the flourishing of specific places where they live, which can be as small as a rock or a corner of a field or as large as a section of a country.
Mm.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
I don't think I've ever heard that before, you know, a situation where someone who passed had such a strong connection to the land. I mean, I've definitely known people, you know, their passing has left a hole, but never someone who's had that kind of connection to the earth.
Mm.
The aunt who lived next to me for most of my life, my aunt and uncle, they lived on the corner of the block where we grew up. She kept a wonderful garden. Mm. And, you know, it always felt wrong. She reached a point where she could no longer maintain the garden, but she did for as long as she could.
Mm.
Once she was gone, it definitely felt less. But I mean, that could just be because no one was planting anything anymore. It's hard to say whether that's just me imagining it or it's actually something happening, you know?
I think it's something that is deeply entwined into the psyche of humans in regards to their effect on the environment. And too often we focus on a person's connection with their home rather than their land.
Which is silly when you think about it, because I mean, the homes are built, homes can be destroyed, but the land is forever, or as forever as a thing can be.
Mm. Plus, the land was your life. You couldn't look after your land and you didn't have a connection with it, you'd die.
That's very true. I will say that is something I wish I had more of. I'm not a person who has a great connection to the outdoors. I never have been. And I wish I had that, because it does seem, you know, I meet people who have that, and a very close friend of mine has that, and it just seems very gratifying. But I do not have that connection.
I love to garden. It always reminds me of my grandfather.
Oh, really? He had a garden?
Yeah, he was a wonderful gardener. I wish I was anywhere near as good as he was.
Food or flowers or both?
Everything. There was nothing he couldn't grow. Very green thing. That's really cool. So
the world needs people like that, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've inherited it, and I find it something that's always helped my mental capacity is spending some time pottering around, though I did tend to get a little bit obsessive in my iller days, like trimming grass with scissors.
Oh my God. Okay.
Antidepressants have some weird side effects, don't they?
I took antidepressants for a very brief period. I never trimmed any grass with scissors.
That's what you're missing out on. I'd ask for a re-prescription.
I think after 20 years, I might have to, it might take some doing, but I could try.
I'm not leaving here until I can cut grass.
I will tell you, I this morning I took my microdose because I'm back microdosing psilocybin. Mm. And I assume my brain chemistry is in such desperate need of this that I don't even feel anything anymore. Because for a while there, I would feel a little bit of something when I took a microdose, even though it's like barely enough to really feel. But now I just take it and it's just my brain just chews through it. No, there's none extra. You're not having any fun with this. We need this to repair whatever the fuck it is you've done to yourself.
Synapse bomb.
Yeah, it really is. Actually, I was reading this book. I can't remember what it's called. It's written by a journalist I met through some people in Vancouver, but it's about seven psychedelics and where they are in sort of the research cycle.
Mm-hmm.
LSD, psilocybin, ibogaine, which was a new one on me.
Mm.
Ketamine, which I did not realize had pharmaceutical applications, aside from, you know, raves.
Yeah. Deep concept albums.
But anyways, point being, it was just fascinating that there was so many different drugs being in, they were sort of being clinically evaluated for their efficacy.
Mm.
You know, apparently ibogaine had great potential for treatment of heroin addiction.
Mm.
The way, you know, I guess it lasts, sort of disrupts the craving for an extensive period. It's not a perfect solution, but it sort of disrupts the craving long enough for you to make the changes you need to make in the rest of your life to sort of avoid the triggers and things like this.
Mm.
So, I mean, psilocybin was, I don't think I'm going to try something like acid. You know, I'm not that committed to the cause, but it definitely has made a huge difference for me.
Mm.
You know, even just microdosing. I know I should probably at some point do a macro dose. I'm told that can be a valuable experience. But it's, I don't know. The idea of being altered for that much time kind of bothers me.
Mm. Best thing to do if you're doing that, put some Pink Floyd on. I'm sure you'll be fine.
All right. So those digressions aside, Cynthia, thank you so, so much for the story. That was a wonderful story. And you sent us a number of them, which we will be sharing the rest at some point in the future. And if you have a story to tell, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com is a place to send it. We love hearing from you. We want to tell your story on the show. And if we can't tell it on the main show, maybe we'll get into a Book of the Dead episode, which we do sometimes. And again, that's ghoststoryguys@gmail.com. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with our Ghost Force shoutouts. Hey there, listeners. Before you reach for that skip 15 seconds ahead button, I promise you this isn't an ad. We wanted to take a minute to talk to you about mental health. On this show, I've always tried to be as honest and open as possible about my struggles with depression and anxiety, because even though we've come a long way towards acknowledging the very real damage these things can do, there is still way too much lingering stigma about reaching out for help. And when you start to feel like there's no help, it's easy to start feeling like there's no hope. But Paul has joined me today to remind you there is always hope and there's always help.
We're not going to try and talk you out of self-harming right now, because we know that's not how it works. Instead, what we wanted to do was tell you something now and hope that should things get bad, you'll remember it and make a phone call or send a text message before you make any permanent decisions. As someone who knows all too well just how important mental health can be, it's never too late to reach out.
In Canada, the number to call is 133-456-4566. In the USA, the new number to call is 988. That's 988.
In the UK, the number to call is 116-123. Or text SHOUT. That's SHOUT to 85258. In Australia, the number to call is 131114.
However bad shit seems, it will pass. And no matter what your brain might be telling you at any given moment, and believe me when I say I know this intimately, there are people who love you and people who care deeply about how you treat yourself. Should a time come when you find yourself despairing, please know that we've both been where you are, and there is a way back to the world. Take care. Welcome back. As always, thanks to Luke, Sarah, Anthony, Joseph, and everyone else who's part of the Ghost Story Guys family. Don't forget to check out Luke's podcast, Luke Lore, available everywhere fine podcasts live. His latest episode, Skeletons Are Awesome, just dropped, and it is a lot of fun. And we get to do a little bit of voice acting on that one too, which is always a good time. Don't forget to check out Joseph's show, The Cardinal Rule, if you're a football fan. That is about Arizona Cardinals football, and you can find that on YouTube. And I believe also now on Spotify. Joseph and I also co-host the monthly horror live stream, Weird Together, about the latest and greatest in independent horror films. And of course, thank you, my friend and co-host, the inimitable Paul Bestel, the paranormal Johnny Carson himself, host of Mysteries and Monsters. Paul, what's coming up on M&M?
We have the return of Chad Lewis.
Fabulous.
Diving into winter legends and lore, and then I'm off to Canada for two successive episodes. One covering Sasquatch and his wanderings around that great former colony of the marvellous United Kingdom. And then some chap called Brendan Stowe talking about his book he's recently released.
He sounds like a bum, is who this guy sounds like.
He was okay. I worked with him a lot, and we did okay. It was okay once he got over his nerves. So that was great fun. And then the mighty Paul Sinclair returns.
Fabulous. And where can everyone find you online?
You can find Mysteries and Monsters across all social media platforms and podcast aggregators.
I'm on Twitter and Instagram as Larger the Truth. You can find my archived interview podcast, Larger the Truth, at Brennan Store, everywhere fine podcasts live. And of course, as I mentioned, Weird Together. That's a monthly YouTube live stream with Joseph Comeau where we talk about the latest and greatest in independent horror. Recently, we talked about Something in the Dirt, which is a fabulous independent horror film that I very much encourage you to check out. All right, so as we said at the top of the show, this show is supported by our patrons. We exist because of our patrons. And so we wanted to say thank you, thank you, thank you. And if you'd like to join the team, head to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. We have all kinds of tiers. We have tiers at 1, 5, 10, and 20. And you get all kinds of stuff like bonus shows. I just did an episode of Host Adventures with Kev Eustace from We Need to Talk About Ghosts and the Dark Paranormal. That's going to be released in two parts over the next couple weeks. Paul and I did a live show, which we're going to be doing monthly now for patrons at the $10 level and above, where we just shoot the breeze with you guys. And again, you can find all of that at patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. And of course, if you support us at the $20 level, that makes you part of an elite club. That makes you part of Ghost Force.
Yeah.
That's right. Every 2 weeks, we thank the members of Ghost Force here in this segment in defiance of God and all his angels.
Bless them.
This time around, the members of Ghost Force are...
Atham Saragon.
Amy Chamberlain.
Brendy.
Carrie Lambertus.
Cheryl Baker.
Crazy Mom.
Generic Bob.
Hannah Brown.
Hunter Siemens.
Hilary Disassure.
Jade Morris.
Jason R. Slaughter.
JJ907.
Jennifer Mullen.
Jennifer Sharko.
Joseph Comeau.
Kimberly Hansen.
Maddie Leatherman.
Mara Noriega.
Mark Semler.
Peter Gunn 08.5.
Rebecca Brink.
Ronder Sheen.
And Robin Dien. You are the few. You are the spooky. You are Ghost Force. For real, guys, thank you so, so much. You guys are the heart and soul of this. We cannot do this without you, and we deeply, deeply appreciate your support.
Yes, and I don't harmonize for many people.
That's it. Yeah, this is a rare treat.
Ghost Force and the Bee Gees.
That's it. See? Yeah, no, this is a esteemed company, guys. And again, if you want to join the team, head to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys.
I don't have any podcast slots coming up right now, but my first article for Haunted magazine will be published in issue 37.
So that should be out soon?
End of February, beginning of March, I believe.
Brilliant. Well, we'll make sure to post about that on our Facebook page and various socials. That's very cool. Can you give us a spoiler as to what it's about?
It's about the ghost that haunts my local park.
Oh, very cool. All right.
I've not found it yet.
Just got to keep looking. I'm ghost hunting, baby. That's why I'm in the public park at night.
Honestly, at my park, there's always some dickhead wandering about with fireworks. So it won't be lonely. It's probably why you can't find it. It's probably buggered off.
Yeah. Even the ghost had enough of this shit. Again, don't forget to check out the revamped ghoststoryguys.com. Scroll down from the main page and you'll see the store. All kinds of cool designs. And yeah. I mean, we also still have our Redbubble and TeePublic stores, but I ordered some samples from the new Fourth Wall store. Very, very happy with the quality. So again, that's ghoststoryguys.com for all your GSG merch needs. Shout out to our composer, Rainy Days for Ghosts. Rainy Days for Ghosts, of course, as you know by now, the project of California-based film journalist and composer Jerry Smith. You can find Jerry's music streaming as Rainy Days for Ghosts everywhere. You get your tunes. And if you want to hire Jerry to score your next project, shoot them an email at rainydaysforghosts@gmail.com. Our theme song, Radio, Into the Darkness We Go, is composed and performed by Peter Kursov of Pedzonta Music. Find him by searching for Pedzonta Music wherever you get your tunes. Our story's theme is The Future Belongs to Them Now by Hexagram. Find them by searching for Hexagram wherever you get your music. Remember, that's Hexagram with two X's, not three. And I guess that's going to do it.
Well then. We'll be back in a couple of weeks, but until then...
Into the darkness we go.
Everyone who Jesus.
Karate.
Talking with my hands. Now I'm really Italian.
Power upgrade.
Me and Kratos.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Time to abandon my son again. I'm a really bad father. This is really bothering Brent.
Fuck. Damn it.
Well, I wasn't far away, but it's not. Yeah. Oh, Christ.
Well. Oh, boy. Boy, oh, boy.
Peekaboo.
Yep. The eternal peekaboo. I got to come up with a better system for this. I've been saying that for 4 months. Telling you, you want to move some t-shirts, you just got to off me. Psst, Paul.
Oh, Bren, what time is it? Why are you in my bedroom?
It looked like you were having a nightmare and I wanted to help.
Why were you watching me? You know what? Never mind. How are you going to help me with my nightmares?
By replacing them with this.
This is another Steve Stred book, isn't it?
You bet your smooth ass it is. Churn the Soil is the latest full-length novel from Canadian extreme horror author Steve Stred. It tells the story of the Border, an off-the-grid wilderness settlement where residents have made a fragile peace with mysterious forest guards, only to see a brutal murder change everything. Churn the Soil delivers a pulse-pounding high-stakes story, where if the cold doesn't kill you, the forest guards will.
Ooh, that does sound good. Where can I get it?
Churn the Soil is available now via Amazon, on Kindle, and in paperback.
Paul, has Brennan broke into our house to terrify you with eldritch horrors again?
Yes, love.
Is this why you wanted to get a dog?
Yes, love. Now go back to sleep.
Churn the Soil by Steve Stred. Paranormal folk horror at its very best. Available now. Wait, you're getting a dog?
We got him last week.
I regret nothing.
It was like Julie was in the room then, Ken.
It's amazing.
I don't know where the accent come from.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.